Welcome to the real world, my father would say. He said this repeatedly as I was growing up. The inherent sarcasm and underlying suggestion that my life would be filled with disappointment was not exactly what I wanted to hear in my pre- and post-pubescent years. Ultimately, though, I found some truth in that. I had been sheltered from life's hardships. A childhood of relative privilege had not prepared me for what I would see or come to understand as an adult. Like the Buddha, I learned that suffering is as common as mud, and that reality won't always match our expectations. It will knock us down sometimes. Disappointment is an inevitable part of life, testing our determination, as Shakespeare expressed in Act 3 of Hamlet, as the Danish prince considers ending his life. To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles, and by opposing, end them. Perhaps you or someone you know has suffered the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, survived experiences of violence, personal tragedy, loss, or catastrophe. Perhaps you've borne your own cross or carried some other burden. My own losses included having been laid off from work after 6 productive, successful years. My parents' downward spiral with dementia in 2009, and my mother's death in 2015. Perhaps you can identify as having been widowed, divorced, unemployed, disabled, mentally ill, incarcerated, or homeless. Starting again or transforming one's life often is not optional for many people, but is made necessary by their experiences. Perhaps you've not had to face such hardships. Perhaps you've been able to choose when and where and how to manage life's more mundane transitions, moving a household, changing schools or jobs, starting or ending a relationship. Along the way, every one of us has made our share of mistakes, fallen short of our ideals. We've done good things for bad reasons and bad things for good reasons. We have hurt someone we love, had a friend or loved one die or leave us. Our bodies won't do what they once did. And yet, regardless of our experiences, somehow, here we are. Each time we've known disappointment or loss, we have survived, picked up the pieces, learned what we could, asked for forgiveness, and started again. Today on Easter Sunday, let us celebrate resilience and transformation, discovery and being open to possibilities. I'm not sure it's true that whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger, but there's something to be said for developing resilience. Karen Rivich and Andrew Chate, in their book, The Resilience Factor, identify 4 fundamental uses for resilience. Overcoming the obstacles of childhood, steering through everyday adversity, surviving a life-altering event as an adult, and reaching out in a spirit of exploration. I think all 4 of them are relevant to today's discussion. Resilience is one of the first things we teach our children, isn't it? When they fall down, we teach them to pick themselves up, dust themselves off, and start all over again. But it's easier to do this when we know there are rewards or opportunities that lie ahead. For example, as I prepared this sermon, I heard about the University of Wisconsin's Odyssey Project. The Odyssey Project offers economically disadvantaged adults the opportunity to begin college studies with the hope that they will go on to further and finish their studies at a 4-year university. I came to appreciate, through Renee's story, how the Odyssey Project honors and empowers adults who have shown tremendous resilience in their lives. Renee's story is powerful, heartbreaking, and beautiful. Hers is the good news of someone who has overcome hardship and struggle and started again, someone who turned a corner, found new hope, and transformed her life. As Renee pointed out, we often don't have a choice about what life puts in front of us. It can be a long, hard climb. And at the same time, she reminded us that it's easy to mess up, make mistakes or poor choices, choose the wrong path. What do you do when your heart is broken or you've been deeply wounded in some way? How do you respond to life's hardships? Experience has taught me that I may respond in any number of ways. I may curl into a seething bundle of rage. I may feel doomed, impotent, and immobilized. I may lash out in anger and further complicate my life. I may dissolve into sorrow, weep in pain and grief, feel all the feels. I may seek solitude in the natural world. I may reach out to those I trust for comfort and perspective. All of these are natural responses. With time and good fortune, our wounds heal. We may come to understand our heartbreak or woundedness in a greater context, from a new perspective. Our vision might expand so that we may see both life's sorrows and joys, and that we are more than just our moments of pain. Even as such experiences might help define who we are, we come to see them as finite moments or periods in our lives. We give these experiences meaning, and having done so, perhaps we come to a better understanding of life. Perhaps we even dare to trust or love again. In the case of my mother's death, I now can better understand someone else's pain or loss. I can be present to them, with them, in their struggle in ways I could not before. Ralph Waldo Emerson once wrote, "Life based on a big love towards the world is full and rich." I've used this phrase, full and rich, in my own hardship, when I have been knocked down. One of the ways I've learned to get back on my feet to help me recover that big love towards the world is to remind myself that my life still is full and rich. You may see me walking down the sidewalk, chanting to myself, full and rich, full and rich, full and rich. I have come to understand my father's view of the world, but I also have come to know that simply being alive is a miracle and a blessing. Some source of all has breathed life into our being. Like the Chinese giant Pangu, we are in and of this world we inhabit, co-creating a future that our children will inherit. Maybe for 18,000 years. The challenge of living a fuller, richer life, it seems to me, is to accept and integrate our losses and still keep our minds and hearts open to possibilities of creation and transformation. Sometimes we can, sometimes we must start again. But starting again can be difficult, even harder than when things end. Unitarian Universalist minister and poet Lynn Unger says this: "Here's the thing about endings. You don't really have to do anything about them. If you've lost a friendship or a job or a marriage or a beloved stuffed animal, you'll probably feel sad and likely angry and possibly guilty or regretful. But if something has truly ended, there's nothing you can do about it except learn to live with the loss. But beginnings are a heck of a lot of work. It's not easy to walk into a room full of people you don't know. When you start a new job or have to learn a whole new set of policies and procedures. When you start a new grade in school, you not only have to learn the classroom rules and meet new people and figure out just what the teacher expects, you're also facing a whole bundle of new things to learn, from multiplication to writing paragraphs, from cursive to algebra. Endings may be hard because of how they feel, but beginnings are where the real work begins. Unger suggests that anytime you take on something new, you're basically committing an act of faith. We walk up to the open door of a new relationship, a new skill, a new job, or hobby, or idea, without knowing where it will take us, she says. But you know that you're going to have to put some work in before you have any idea what your new beginning will grow into. And the best part, she says, is that as long as we can maintain a beginner's mind, a beginner's view, we get the special sense of excitement that comes with exploring the unknown. To be a beginner is to be filled with a sense of possibility, with the feeling of new worlds unfolding in front of you. One of the Odyssey Project's greatest gifts is that by learning new things, developing new skills, and coming to know themselves better, students experience this sense of possibility. They find the courage and the will to embrace the unknown and to change the patterns of life that have defined them. They've listened to the still, small voice within, and they've discovered Digedanken sind frei. Their thoughts are free, and their thoughts give them power. Renee and hundreds of other Odyssey students are proof that some of us do make it out of bad situations. Hello? Opportunity calling. With the mind-opening experience of education comes empowerment, feeling like the little engine that could, with the compounded benefit of affecting not just one life, but generations. Unitarian Universalism celebrates the inherent worth and dignity of these students and the search for truth and meaning that has made such a difference in their lives. I imagine their experiences are like those expressed in today's songs, bringing their spirits to the sea and standing on the shore, feeling a light within, a flame burning away their tears, awakening and arising from bended knee. Someone I have admired for his use of metaphor like this is Unitarian Universalist minister and author Robert Fulghum. He is known for, among other titles, All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. In that book, he wrote a story in which he watched his neighborhood children playing a game of hide-and-seek outside. But, he noted, there's always one child who hides too well. And as he watched from his window, as the other children were searching and searching and about to give up, Fulghum shouted to the hidden one, "Get found, kid!" Rather than hide and seek, Fulghum wrote, he prefers the game of sardines. Has anyone here played sardines? In sardines, one person hides, and all the rest of the people join him or her until everyone is packed in like a can of sardines, in contrast to hide-and-seek. The simple game of sardines illustrates the good news of universalist theology, that in the end, all are found, that God provides salvation to all. Fulghum wrote that he thinks God is a sardines player, and that God may be found in the same way everyone gets found in sardines, by the sound of laughter of those heaped together at the end. When we open ourselves to the possibilities of connection. Allow ourselves to get found. Then we're better able to appreciate, as Gordon McKeeman said, open our eyes, our ears, our minds, our hearts to the amplest dimensions of life. It is through such connections that our lives may be transformed. We came here today to this community of fellow seekers, as was said in our opening words, to attend to our vision, to summon the power of tradition, the exhilaration of newness, the wisdom of the ages, and the knowing of the very young, and to rejoice in manifold promises and possibilities. In the days ahead, every time we make a mistake and we decide to start again, every time we are lonely and we let someone be our friend, every time we're disappointed and we choose to hope, let's hearken back to the songs and stories we heard here today and the time we spent together. As we re-engage with the real world, let us remember to open our minds and our hearts to the amplest dimensions of life. Unfurl ourselves into the grace of beginning, in faith that new possibilities will unfold before us. By transforming ourselves, we may transform the world. Blessed be and amen.